This is the beginning of Cosmic Fire webinar commentary 7B. We're on page 1207. We're talking about hierarchies 6 and 7. And one is the vital life of the atoms, and the other is the vital life of the forms of all the etheric bodies of every tangible object, and even the vehicles of the different kinds. You know, we're not just confining ourselves to the mineral kingdom when we say object. I think we have to think as well of the human body, the animal body, the vegetable body, the mineral body, yes, also, as objects, anything that can be touched tangibly. So whatever provides the vehicles for the lower kingdoms of nature, these vehicles are sustained by the etheric nature of the sixth hierarchy. The function of this hierarchy, the sixth, is well described in the words of the old commentary. The devas hear the word, go forth. They sacrifice themselves. See, what are they called here? They're called the sacrificial fires. So they sacrifice themselves. They are called the sacrificial fires. And out of their own substance, they build the form desired. They substand the emerging physical form, but they themselves are etheric. They draw life and the material from themselves and yield themselves to the divine impulse, and they substand all physical forms. Okay, that's a good abbreviation, isn't it? Physical forms. Right. As objects. All physical forms as objects. Usually objects means, you know, something that is inanimate. There really isn't anything inanimate. Soul is all pervasive, and everything is sensitive to or interactive to some degree. Nothing is entirely inert in this universe of perpetual motion. Nothing is ever still. The only stillness that exists is absoluteness, which has no parts and thus is unchanging and thus no motion. And yet, and yet, my friend William Meter and I, we talked about, you know, joked about the name of my book, Infinitization of Selfhood, should really be called And Yet. And Yet, because I always found a reason to contradict what I had said. And yet, in other words, always offering the opposite point of view, the apparent contradiction. So the devas hear the word go forth, they sacrifice themselves, and out of their own substance they build the desired form. They build, i.e., attract the desired, the form desired. They draw life and the material from themselves. The material, at least, of the underlying form, and yield themselves to the divine impulse. Are they vital or are they lowest matter? This is the point. Are they vital or are they lowest matter? Perhaps lowest matter comes in a different category, an eighth category. I'll have to examine this a little more carefully, but all of these are vital lives, and there's something about lowest matter which is not especially vital. The life of the atom is not the same as the matter of the atom. I think I can say that. The energy at the heart of every atom, its positive aspect. If the seventh creative hierarchy is the life at the heart of the atom, its vital or positive or vital aspect. What, then, is the electronic aspect of the atom? It's almost as if the gross Maya is caused by the lower part of the atom. What is the matter of the grossest Maya? Well, in a way, everything is alive, but is there anything that is relatively inert or still is material with respect? See, what is material or denser with respect to the vitality-giving nature of the creative hierarchies, even the lowest? So anyway, the sixth creative hierarchy is related to form building, and the sixth creative hierarchy sustains the forms. Okay? The sixth creative hierarchy sustains the etheric forms which substand objectivity. The seventh creative hierarchy sustain the atoms which are built into the forms, which are built into the outer forms. So let's just say that the sixth creative hierarchy deals with much larger forms. Every atom has, of course, an etheric form. The sixth creative hierarchy deals with much larger forms, which are etheric, and which gather aggregations of atoms which are much larger than the atom itself. The seventh creative hierarchy just concerns itself with the vitalization of the atom. And we will have to look at subatomic particles and of still tinier constituents. Maybe the seventh creative hierarchy is involved with them as well. This would get into, you know, deeply fifth-rate territory, and the division of the atom, we're sort of on the border here. Some of these subatomic particles are really etheric energy events which last only for a very short time. But I'll leave that to the fifth-rate types. I don't want to get too tiny here. I dealt with what I call the UPE, you know, in my book I called it the UPE, the ultimate particle. Particle event for any universe. And I considered it the smallest time-space event. The smallest possible time-space event, which was indivisible because of the will of God. I know, you know, almost gets right back to theology, but a decision is made high up there that there shall be no more divisibility, and thus it is. Thus it seemed to me, anyway. Right. All right, so what have we done? It is not possible to say much more anent these two last hierarchies. Much that concerns them has been dealt, been covered in the section of this treatise which deals with the fire of matter. So, you know, the first 100 pages or so of this book, 100, 200, something like that. And, you know, latent fire and active fire, the fires of matter and the sustaining fires. It just seems that creative hierarchies are always vital or etheric, but that matter per se can be latent and must be sustained by etheric vitality. I'm still thinking of the number eight, you know, and the eighth sphere and the great Deva, which has captured the members of the Black Lodge. There's something about the eighth sphere which can concern the densest matter. According to HBB, you know, maybe there's matter even denser than the dense matter which we see, and maybe there is some sort of aggregation of wasted material that follows after our planet, as she calls it. You know, there's some kind of description. She's pretty dramatic. I'll show you what I mean. If I can find it, I'd like to. But I'm not sure I can. Too many references, you know. But let's say dust hole. No, that's cust hole. That won't do. Let's try dust hole. Can we find anything here? Yeah, H. Sphere from HBB, in her collected writings, the Gehenna, termed by the, well, let's make it bigger, huh? The Gehenna, termed by the occultists, the eighth sphere is merely a planet like our own, attached to the latter and following it in its penumbra, a kind of dust hole, a place where all its garbage and filth is consumed, to borrow an expression of the above-mentioned authors, and on which all the dross and scorification of the cosmic matter pertaining to our planet is in a continual place of remodeling. The furnace of nature is the eighth sphere. It seems like you're going to get reworked. If you go into the eighth sphere, your form is not adequate according to the principles of the solar logos or planetary logos, and you've got to get reworked. When man fails to mold his soul in the image and likeness of the great Adam, we say, a Buddha, Krishna, or Christ, according to our respective creeds, he is a failure of nature, and nature has to remold the cast before it can launch it again on the shoreless ocean of immortality. She had a wonderful way with words. You know, some fourth ray, possibly. She was very artistic, I also understand. Okay. Well, let's see. Isis unveiled. Oh, and all of these horrible spirits and so forth. But you can just take a look at that, and many are connected with the eighth sphere, and they need to be remolded and remodeled and reshaped. If it's the what's called the furnace, Vulcan is involved with the eighth sphere. Yeah. I think so. I'll just put that here, you know, just for fun. And Black Lodge. And I would say, there we go. And maybe Vulcan involved with the eighth sphere. Vulcan involved with the EIGH eighth sphere, as it is a furnace. And you just are not going to have any furnace without fiery Vulcan as part of the process, I would say. Okay. Anyway, let us go on. I've included some of these discussions of the demons and those who are connected with this eighth sphere. And Moses, as Master Moria, he says, enacted a cruel and murderous law against such would-be witches. But Jesus, full of justice and divine love to humanity, healed instead of killing them. Subsequently, our clergy, the pretended exemplars of Christian principles, followed the law of Moses and quietly ignored the law of him whom they call their one living God by burning dozens of thousands of such pretended or those who were claimed to be witches. Yeah. Well, there are these negative beings, and I think, you know, when we saw The Lord of the Rings, some of us recently have seen that. We've seen in the orcs and some of the other demonic figures those who could be associated with the eighth sphere, the Gehenna of the Bible, the fallen to the eighth sphere, the nearest to our earth. He can repent, and those who have fallen and can, by exercising the remnants of his willpower, strive upward, and like a drowning man struggle once more to the surface. A strong aspiration to retrieve his calamities, a pronounced desire, will draw him once more into the earth's atmosphere. Here he will wander and suffer more or less in dreary solitude. His instincts will make him seek with avidity contact with living persons. These spirits are the invisible but too tangible magnetic vampires, the subjective demons so well known to the medieval ecstatics, nuns, and monks, to the witches made so famous in The Witch's Witch Hammer, and to certain kind of Vulcan in there, and to certain sensitive clairvoyants according to their own confessions. Well, okay, HBB knew these deep occult matters of a very unpleasant kind, okay, and she wrote about them in Vices Unveiled, okay. That part has to do with vice, at least. All right, so let's see here. I would only point out that just as we teach the occult, in the occult wisdom, that there is a definite progression from one kingdom into the next higher above, so there is a similar activity in the realm of hierarchies. As I say, the hierarchies are like great functions, and the rising monads can move from one function to another. The functions are sustained, the hierarchies are sustained, and the monads at the upper end of one hierarchy can enter through the lowest part of the hierarchy above. If you think about solar angels, those who are on their way to becoming solar angels are members of the fourth grade of hierarchy, but they will be members of a fifth grade of hierarchy when they become solar angels, but not the highest part of that hierarchy, of course. Not the highest part. The lives which compose a hierarchy pass in ordered cycles into the next above, though the word above but serves to mislead. It's an expansion of scope and power. Expansion of scope, power, consciousness. It's not above in any sense of, obviously, spatial dimension. It is consciousness and the realization which must be considered as being transferred. And the consciousness of one hierarchy expands into that of the next. A solar angel knows so much more than a member of the fourth grade of hierarchy can know. If you think about that, a solar angel or solar petri is a member of, member of the council within the sun, which no member of the fourth grade of hierarchy can be. So consciousness is vastly expanded for such a being. This can also be viewed in terms of energy, the negative lives of a hierarchy following the sequence, negative energy, equilibrized energy, positive energy. So in the seven forms and nine states of consciousness, or seven, structural forms, struck and nine states of consciousness of any creative hierarchy. There is a rising from negative energy through equilibrized energy to positive energy. And, you know, we can see that the human beings the lower human beings are part of the negative energy. The higher human beings, more average, more normal, enter into the equilibrized energy as they're beginning to reverse the wheel, and the initiates and disciples and initiates are entering into this positive energy. And the most positive, I suppose, would be the planetary spirits or Chohans. Of course, it's said they are no longer men, as are the masters, but they are still, I think, members of the fourth creative hierarchy. If they're not men, it means they're not members of the human kingdom. But you can still be a man in the monadic sense and a member of the fourth creative hierarchy. But then there comes a time when education takes you to a different place and you can enter the next creative hierarchy, and it takes a Mahakalpa to move to the next stage, it seems. It takes perhaps a Mahakalpa to move to the next stage. And do the solar angels somehow move directly into the stage of planetary logoi, or do they move into the third creative hierarchy and the fourth and so forth? How directly does that happen, that these solar angels are in a way breathed out in groups and become eventually planetary logoi, or do they pass through other hierarchical stages? We don't know the paths of the creative hierarchies. But we are dealing with the way of higher evolution, and those who go to Sirius and become solar angels can transfer to the ray path, they can transfer to the path of planetary logoi, perhaps they can even move directly to the path of solar logoi, although it seems that a good way to become a solar logos is to work through the path of the planetary logoi. The positive lives of one hierarchy become the negative lives of another when they pass into it. And this is, you know, this is obvious. This is the analogy in relation to the kingdoms of nature. The higher animal becomes the lower human being. It's quite obvious. And this it is which leads to the general confusion of ideas under which the average student labors. Well, you know, I tend to let us consider ourselves to be average students, because we do labor under a confusion of ideas, I fear, and we have to keep all these things straight eventually. If he is to comprehend the matter with accuracy, he must study each hierarchy in a threefold manner. I suppose, as he says here, negative, equilibrized, and positive. And equilibrized, I'm going to make that a add to dictionary. And out of the three, probably seven forms can be derived, characteristic of each hierarchy, and also maybe three states of consciousness for each of the threefold divisions, making the nine initiations of a creative hierarchy. And view it also in its transitional state, as the negative blends and merges into the positive, or into the equilibrized, and then the positive, and the positive becomes the negative pole of a higher vibratory state. So, you know, as DK says, it's really a question of the consciousness of one hierarchy expands and deepens into that of the next higher hierarchy, I believe. That's how we could understand it. Okay. So someone like the Christ, you know, the Christ is on the ray path. It seems he will become a cosmic ray of love. Who knows of what stature? I mean, we always have to work up through the ranks. It is said that no matter what other path may command his attention or attract his attention, he will eventually return to Sirius. Will he then become a solar angel? I mean, how can we speculate on these things? Perhaps some sort of higher being connected with Sirius after all. And you know, I just have a feeling. It would be nice if it was an intuition, but eventually that the Christ will be on the path of the solar logoi. So it seems to me. But, you know, it's a bit of an impertinence to even think along that line. So, if he is to comprehend the matter with accuracy, he must study each hierarchy in a threefold manner and view it also in its transitional state. As the negative blends and merges into the positive, and the positive becomes the negative pole of a higher vibratory state. So what do we have in a way, you know, onward and ever upward, in a way, maybe not ever, but for a long time, onward and ever upward. Okay, from one creative hierarchy to the next, maybe in sequence, but we cannot be sure. Are there ways to skip steps? I don't know. Must solar angels necessarily merge and become triads? Are triads somehow going to be entering the state of the divine builders? Do the divine builders, are they somehow connected with the planetary logoi? Because solar angels certainly are connected with the planetary logoi. All these different streams of possibilities are not for us really to know about, except in the broadest general sense that opportunity is virtually endless in our cosmos. There are therefore nine states of consciousness through which each hierarchy can pass. Probably one, you know, three connected with, maybe three connected with the negative, three connected with the equilibrized, and maybe three connected with the positive, although it may be differently divided. And some idea of the significance of this and their relativity can be gained by considering the nine initiations of the fourth creative hierarchy. There are nine initiations of the solar logos. That's what I want to call to our attention. There are nine initiations of the solar logos and of the human creative hierarchy, and only seven of the planetary logoi, which is why I said that there is almost a closer relationship between the human being and the solar logos, the human being, considered as a monad, and the solar logos. Within these nine distinct expansions through which each life in each hierarchy must pass, are to be found lesser expansions, and it is here that the main difficulty for the student of divine psychology lies. But we are indeed dealing with divine psychology. Psychology. But we are indeed dealing with divine psychology. So, just the way there are initiations, say, between the first and second, and maybe between others, I don't know. But between the first and second initiation to fire, earth, air, and water, and even before the first initiation, lesser and minor initiations. So there are between these, in other hierarchies, different intermediate stages. Sometimes D.K. deals with intermediate stages. He sometimes says that his formulas in discipleship in the New Age are not so much about the initiation per se, but about intermediate stages. The whole subject concerns the psyche, and, you know, let us remember what the treatise on cosmic fire is. Treatise on cosmic fire is the psychological key to the secret doctrine. And when we're dealing with these large and massive relationship between the lives, this is psychology, this is divine psychology. These are beings, their habitual behavior, their states of consciousness, their interaction. This is psychology. The whole subject concerns the psyche, or second aspect, of every life. Superhuman, human, and subhuman. And only when the true psychology is better understood will the subject take on its importance. That is, the subject of what? The subject, oh, subjective, subject of the creative hierarchies. And their quality, their interaction, their function. I think that can, their place in the whole, according to their quality. Then the nine unfoldments of each hierarchy. I mean, just think about that. We go into, or maybe we can even find that in the various kingdoms. But if we really think about it, you know, and this is important, the nine unfoldments in the fourth creative hierarchy do not all occur in the same kingdom. Because by the time we're, you know, taking the third, fourth, fifth initiation, we're not in the same kingdom anymore. We're in the kingdom of souls, but we're still in the fourth creative hierarchy. When we take the sixth initiation, we're certainly not even in the kingdom of souls. We're in the kingdom of planetary lives, but we're still in the fourth creative hierarchy. So the hierarchy spans a number of kingdoms. As a matter of fact, as I have said and recently thought, I think the fourth creative hierarchy spans six kingdoms. That man the monad as a mineral, man the monad as a vegetable. Know some of those, right? Man the monad as an animal. Know some of those too, right? Man the monad as a human being. Man the monad as a member of the kingdom of souls. Man the monad as a planetary spirit. Always man the monad and a number of kingdoms connected with that, right? At first I was stymied by the relationship between the kingdoms and the creative hierarchies, but eventually I began to see, well, heavens, with the in-metalization, in-vegetalization, in-zoonation of the monad, what are these kingdoms but the human monad in various forms? However, the other creative hierarchies are not the human monad. So the seventh, the sixth, the fifth creative hierarchies, they are not the human monad, although all monads are one. You know, we have to eventually realize that being is one, but we're talking about the life and function of emanations of pure being at different levels of cosmos and in different times and spaces. Study of the matter in each kingdom will not as yet bring full enlightenment regarding the constitution of the elements of the human kingdom and its principles. I mean, you know, what are the... Take a look here. The nine unfoldments of each hierarchy will be somewhat comprehended. Can we go into the seventh creative hierarchy and determine the nine unfoldments of the life of the atom? Well, you know, there might be subatomic particles involved in all kinds of tiny units, much smaller than the atom, may be involved. What are the nine unfoldments of the lunar lords? How can we fathom that? We can, what are the nine unfoldments of the members of the fifth creative hierarchy? Maybe, I don't know, four unfoldments above, below, and five above. What are the nine unfoldments of the fifth creative hierarchy? Maybe four below and five above. Somewhere I saw that relationship of the five above the four. And we sometimes called, you know, the solar angels are called the five-fold links, something like that. Five-fold is their nature. Maybe four-fold is somehow the nature of the lower members of this hierarchy, akin to the personality, which is really a lunar element. Somehow the sun and moon are really meeting in this fifth creative hierarchy. It seems to be both lunar and solar at the same time. Five unfoldments of the human creative hierarchy. Well, DK is telling us about the nine initiations, about the highest of those initiations. He's not saying much. He says something. But, you know, is it for us meaningful? We can't fathom. We can barely fathom what the third degree would be. And then the fourth, you know, every state of consciousness demands a new type of progression into a new unimaginable, unfathomable state. Maybe some glimmer of light on the horizon tells us what the impending state might be, but until we get there, we cannot know. And that's why people are so divided by their states of consciousness. You may look at them and you see the same animal form. There it is. There's the human being. But the states of consciousness are so varied, are they not? I think. All right. So, study of the matter in each kingdom. You know, mineral, vegetable, animal will not as yet bring full enlightenment. Well, we just can't know those states. Regarding the contribution of the elements of the human kingdom and its principles, which are the manifestations of different hierarchies. Regarding the constitution of the elements of the human kingdom and its principles, which are the manifestations of the different hierarchies. In other words, we're learning something. We learn something of the contribution of the different principles or the different hierarchies to the principles of man. But how does this square with the idea that the principles of man really come from the monad of man? So if the lower hierarchies are somehow contributing the principles of man, that's really something that has to be dealt with. If the lower hierarchies are contributing the lower principles of man, how can it be said that all these seven principles come from the monad itself? Which I do believe there is good reason to think is the way it happens. So, you know, we're going to have to really study that. The true revelation will only come as the following points are recognized. And what are these points? The triple nature of man, the three periodical vehicles, spirit, soul, and body, you know, of course, spirit, soul, and body, which is personality or physical body. Physical body. The distinctions between the vehicle and that which utilizes the vehicle. So a consciousness and a principle which colors that consciousness are expressing through a vehicle. So we are the consciousness always. We are the consciousness of the monad in a very attenuated manner. We are always monadic consciousness, I believe. But that consciousness is colored, perhaps, by the principle, let us say, of desire. The consciousness is under the influence of desire and expressing through a relatively dense vehicle we call the desire body, the astral body. The consciousness is always the monad, the principle is manas, and we have the true man behind the manas, the true monad behind the manas, working through a material vehicle we call the mental vehicle in any of its divisions. The distinction between a ray, and this is the contradictory, this is the one. This is the apparently contradictory paragraph, which seems to contradict what DK said about the relation between a creative hierarchy and a ray, because earlier the ray was the life and the creative hierarchy was the life and the ray was the veil. But now what's he going to say? The distinction between a ray, which is the expression of logoic energy and a positive emanation, and a hierarchy, which is a negative emanation of the logos upon which his positive energy impresses itself, driving the hierarchy onto self-expression and forcing the marriage of the poles. Well, do you sense the direct contradiction? Amazing possible contradiction here. But, you know, there's the leapfrog principle. So what is lower can have a higher correspondence, which is higher than that to which the what was lower. Oh, that's terrible. All right. So, in other words, every hierarchy is veiled by a ray. So let's just say, I want to say it this way. There are veiling rays and propelling rays. The veiling rays coordinate with the quality and status of the indwelling life and consciousness. And they are a means of expression for that indwelling life, a life or a creative hierarchy. But the propelling rays are not, as it were, emitted by the creative hierarchy, but are transmitted and are drivers of the creative hierarchy forward. So it's like they are positive to the creative hierarchy and propel it in certain new directions, which is not the same as the veiling ray. So if you think about it, let's say a ray goes forth as a means of expression from a creative hierarchy, which is veiled by that ray. But when that ray impacts a lower creative hierarchy, it acts as a positive and propelling force from within, or from outside. So what is a veil for a higher creative hierarchy becomes a propellant for a lower one. So what is a veil for a higher creative hierarchy becomes a propellant repellent for ant for a lower creative hierarchy. That's, you know, all I can say. The distinction between a ray, which is the expression of logoic energy, and a positive emanation, and a hierarchy, which is a negative emanation of the logos, in other words, upon which his positive energy impresses itself, drives that hierarchy on to self-expression and forcing the marriage of the poles. So, and a hierarchy which is a negative emanation of the logos, you know, this may have more to do with the forms through which a creative hierarchy expresses than with the inner life itself, which is monadic life. This leapfrog principle, you know, it really does exist. It's as if we always look for higher correspondences. Suppose you have a pair, a lower and a higher. Well, then you have a higher corresponding pair, a lower and a higher. But the lower of the higher corresponding pair is higher than the higher of the lower. So you've got B and A. Here are B and A. And now higher B, higher A. B is higher than A. No, B is lower than A, but the higher correspondence of B is higher than lower A. And of course, the higher correspondence of A is higher than higher B. And thus it goes as we ascend. So I'm, you know, in all of this, you know, the Tibetan is giving us quizzical statements that really require the penetration of the intuition and a great sense of cosmic interrelationships in order to make sense of. A ray is considered a positive emanation here, but elsewhere it was considered to be a veil upon the positive life that was the creative hierarchy. Now, maybe, you know, if I attempt to go somewhere here, and we go, you know, onward to, I'm just going to say creative hierarchy. Creative hierarchies in relation to rays, the hierarchies and the ray contrast. So there are different things here. This is the one, let us bear carefully in mind that the rays are the positive aspect of manifestation and pass down into the negative matter, deva or hierarchical substance. But at what level are these rays? Thus causing certain evidences of activity. The hierarchies are the negative aspect as far as the rays are concerned and are responsive to ray impulse. So, you know, okay. Here, this whole thing gives it to us. There must not be any confusion as to the distinction between the hierarchies of beings and the seven rays. For though there is a close connection, there is no resemblance. And you remember this one. The rays are but the primordial forms of certain lives who carry in their hearts all the seeds of form. The hierarchies are the manifold groups of lives at all stages of unfoldment and growth who will use the forms. So here the ray is in a lesser position. Let's see if we go back here. Is there anything else? Right. The ray, look here, you know, there must not be any confusion as to the distinction between rays, beings, and the seven rays. The rays are but the primordial forms. The hierarchies are the manifold groups of lives at all stages of unfoldment. Rays are the vehicle and are therefore negative receivers. The hierarchies are the users of the vehicles, and in the nature of these lives and the quality of their vibration, which under the great law of attraction brings to them the needed forms. And it is the nature of these lives which brings to them the... So these are the two primal distinctions, life and form. And the ray here is more associated with form. So, okay, it is a contradiction unless you use the leapfrog principle, right? So I'm going to put this here. You know, try to give a couple of things. It says the whole subject is very involved and difficult, and it certainly is. It certainly is involved and difficult. But it's a question of looking at from different angles and different strata of the cosmos. A higher ray is higher than a lower hierarchy. A higher hierarchy is higher than a lower ray. That's one way of thinking about it. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, gather the relevant references here. Here is one where the rays are positive and the hierarchies are negative. Okay. And I'll clean that up in a minute. And here's another one that we've just looked at. All right, these are the two paragraphs which I think are really important, and they're, you know, just about a direct contradiction of each other, I would say. Whatever. This, get rid of the underline, turn it green, and make it number 10, and I think we're okay. Close enough. All right, we'll give the same kind of font. All right, so there will be confusion. There will definitely be confusion at first. And, you know, so I would just say, what is the level at which the ray is coming in? Is it, in a way, the emanation of a still greater hierarchy and thus impinging upon a lower hierarchy as a driving, propelling force for that lower hierarchy? Just the way the veil or the form or the qualification of the lower hierarchy impinging upon a still lower hierarchy drives and propels that lower hierarchy, and this is the conditioning force. And but when we say that that hierarchies are lower, what do we mean here? They are negative emanation of the logos? Well, monads cannot be negative emanations of the logos. Let's just say this. Yeah, that's right. So if creative hierarchies are monads, if creative hierarchies are monads, they cannot be negative emanations of the logos. But if we are talking about the forms of creative hierarchies made up of lower substance energy. Okay, substance energy. Then we can talk about a negative emanation. So positive is positive to something that's negative, but that negative is positive to something which below it is negative. And the AB, you know, +0, +0, or 0101, it continues all the way through. All right, well, I think whenever I get caught up in a subject... And that's a long paragraph coming. Whoa. I always think that I'm reaching the end, and indeed I am. The whole subject is very involved and difficult, but light will begin to dawn before long when science recognizes the nature, place, and responsibility of the etheric body in man, or of his vital body in its position as the true form, a positive, to a dense physical matter which is a negative, but a negative to something still more positive, and basic unit of the dense physical body, as the true form and basic unit of the dense physical body. So when we speak of the true etheric body of Mars, the Earth, whatever, maybe Mercury, we really mean the etheric body and not that congestion which we call the dense physical body, which is no true form. When this has been admitted and the illuminating facts recorded and known, bring in the fifth ray types, when the connection between the two is grasped and the necessary deductions and correlations are made, the whole subject of logoic manifestation and the work of the lives, they're their lives again, aren't they? Not, you know, here they are not negative beings here, but are monads, which are pure being itself. The whole subject of the logoic manifestation of the work of the lives on the four higher planes with their effect upon the logoic dense physical plane, right, our three worlds of expression, solid, liquid, and gas, will take on a new coloring. So the fifth ray science, we expect fifth ray science to come to our aid in this matter during the Aquarian Age. The thoughts of men will be revolutionized on the subject of creation. I suppose, you know, how emanative descent works to densify. So form, true form, becomes densified and thus becomes the object. The terms and expressions now used will be corrected and all will be expressed in terms of form building energy and the three modes of electrical phenomena, you know, fire by friction, solar fire, and electric fire, or the negative and the equilibrizing and the positive. This realization is rapidly on its way, but only the generation after the one which the children of the present age are expressing. So, well, we're talking about that generation that maybe would have been born in the 50s and 60s. We'll see it demonstrated to such an extent as to place etheric electrical phenomena beyond all dispute. It is happening now. The nuclear physicists are venturing into this realm now and are measuring etheric electrical energy and in the search for certain particles, short-lived particles, they are entering this domain. And this will be done by the coming in of egos who are fully conscious on the etheric levels and who can see all that is now the subject of speculation, and maybe they are with us. But we have to remember what happened with atomic energy here. This book was written in 1925, or before that, actually, and then the energy of the atom was released, and humanity basically entered a condition of mortal peril because its moral quality would not be sufficient to protect it from the energies which were now at its disposal. They, from the greatest numbers and high, from the great numbers and high state of intellectuality, will rescue the whole matter from the realm of controversy and demonstrate the facts. So, sight on the etheric plane will be necessity, will be necessity. And those who can are here now or coming. Okay, I think I've gone far enough. Indeed I have. And what we have here then is the end of, keep on wanting to say esoteric astrology, but it's Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 7B. Is that correct? Yeah, 7B. And we're on page, all right, 1210. We're going to be, you know, now entering material and beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 8A, page 1210. We're going to be entering areas that are now beyond the Esoteric Astrology book. Already we have. The Esoteric Astrology book had lots of material on the creative hierarchies, but you can see that here he's branching into a true discussion which was not going to be appropriate for the strictly astrological treatment of those creative hierarchies. So now I've been through the section on the creative hierarchies two times. I feel better about the second time. You know, I've said many things. Some of them may be erroneous, but I generally tend to correct as I go along. At least correct according to a deeper sense of what is true. It may not really be true, but at least it's a deeper sense of what is true. Okay, friends, that's going to be it. And we'll start with Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries. Seems a little awkward. CFC, maybe? CFC would be better, Cosmic Fire Commentaries? Forget webinar, right? Be easier, wouldn't it? Cosmic Fire Commentaries. CFC, 8A. Okay, we'll see you later, and we'll persist. We still have, how many pages do we have to go in this book? What is the last page of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire? Plus, you know, the stanzas of Xian, which can drive you crazy, really. Let's see. Right here, we'll be able to tell. And we are on page 1283, so where are we now? 1210. We've got 73 pages left to go, and they are tough. They are tough, and they'll take a long time. Maybe in some ways tougher than esoteric astrology, but not necessarily tougher than the last pages in esoteric astrology, which are tough. Okay. Till later. Okay. Bye-bye.